TFM.
Welcome, stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango. I'm your host, Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, on not this show, but many others, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I'm so happy to see you, even if this world we're in is not quite what we expected.
Well, I was very shocked to wake up this morning, Chris, and have a strange animated cat show up on my iPhone talking to me as if we knew each other. I have no idea what that's about, but apparently they do not know anything about me because I'm not a cat fan.
Meow. I think the reality is, Matthew, is that, you know, you're pretty much the same Matthew that I've known for all these years, except this time you have slightly better pet programming skills.
Apparently, yes. I am exceedingly lonely on this version of Earth. And so, yeah, I'm not sure what that says about me either.
Well, we're going to find out as we discuss the second episode of Star Trek Picard Season 2 today, Penance. A quick rundown of the scenario as Q reveals to Jean-Luc the reason for their latest encounter. Picard learns that he is the most ruthless, bloodthirsty military leader mankind has ever known, leading Earth in a charge to rid the galaxy of non-humans. With the help of his friends, crew, and the Borg Queen, he must make it through Eradication Day to time travel back to 2024 Los Angeles in search of someone called the Watcher to discover and repair whatever change to history led to this totalitarian future. So, Matthew, let's start with the opening scene. We picked up from the first episode. Q is with Picard, and we get a lot of interesting reveals of what's going on, and you and I may be happy, maybe not, given the way it turned out. Got a lot of DS9 name dropping.
Yeah, we did. That's one of the things that I had noted. I have a notepad where I took some serious notes about the episode and you know, hearing Dukat and the Martok drop, as well as General Sisko was very good and really interesting. I'll throw in here, if I remember correctly, in the promo art, we saw an orb or at least a Bajoran symbol, which makes me wonder, with all these Deep Space Nine references, if we are going to see some sort of use of maybe the Orb of Time as a way to help heal whatever Q is broken. Very similar to actually what happens in the Star Trek book series that just came out from David Mack and Dayton Ward and James Swallow, where they ended the Litverse and kind of brought it in line with the Picard universe timeline. And so, you know, again, great references, and just it's one of those things where it just got me wondering, what are they going to do? So that was really cool.
Yeah, that was interesting. And of course, I noticed it right away in those promos, being a Niner. And it's not an orb, it's the Reckoning tablet that they found in Bahala. And that tablet is like 30,000 years old and it has all these inscriptions on it. And so I don't know how it might tie into this story. At first, I was thinking that because Picard is so into archaeology, he's gathered these artifacts around and that's the reason that it's there. But, you know, seeing where the story's going, hearing the DS9 tie-ins, it's certainly possible that orb technology is going to somehow come into this. I would be a bit surprised if that happens, honestly, but it's certainly a possibility. And I don't think that they put the Reckoning tablet there on the table just randomly, just throwing in pieces from past episodes for fun. It probably does have something to do with the story in some way, but I don't know what.
Hey, man, all I could say is, how cool would it be to have the Emissary show up, you know, for some reason. Like, I just, again, like, there's so many possibilities that you can do. And again, having seen the Orb of Time used specifically in the Coda series, I could totally imagine them using that, which, again, I think would be very neat to kind of see them kind of work in some of that stuff that we had seen in the books there, but, you know, for this audience. And so, but, I mean, in the end, as a Niner, it was just nice to get those name drops. And very nice to know that this is an alternate time. Well, not really an alternate timeline, but a timeline that Q has had something done to. So, like, those characters are hopefully still around. I mean, except for Dukat in the Prime timeline. You know, I'd hate to think that General Martok or Sisko are gone in the Prime timeline as it should be, not as Q has messed with it.
Right, right. I have one idea. I think it will be very difficult for them to get Avery Brooks to come back and be on the show, but something I think might work really well is that Q snaps his fingers and transports Picard into that scene from William Shatner's The Captain's documentary where Avery is sitting there playing piano and talking, and like, you don't have any idea what he's going on about. I think that could be, that in fact might be the moment in 2024 where he said something, someone misunderstood, they just couldn't follow the logic of the narrative, and it changed history, and it led to this future somehow. I don't know how, but somehow.
It could be. So one of the, obviously, I think the beginning of the episode and a lot of, I would say, the first probably 25 minutes of this episode are really about kind of filling us in with a lot that's happened in this universe and what's caused that to happen. And the biggest thing, I think, you know, Q gives a lot of really interesting tidbits and details about what's going on with Picard and why this is all happening and basically why he's put him in this universe as it is this way. And he says a couple of really interesting things. One, he says that something about Picard is dying, and Q says that he is the suture in the wound. We get the idea that Q himself isn't well. So that idea that something in Picard is dying, I thought was really interesting. And I think, you know, both you and I touched upon this last episode where we talked about this idea of that this really does seem to be about Picard having never actually let himself grow. In fact, that it's his inability of vulnerability with any one person fully that's really causing this. And I think when, you know, when Q said that, I was immediately struck by that's the Picard, part of Picard that is dying because he's lived so long and squelched it for so long that it's finally, it's like that flame is just about out.
Yeah. And like you said, it seems that Q is also not well, and Picard comments on that here and there. And it made me start thinking about the connection between the two of them, because of all the people in the universe that Q could go around and harass, and he does go and harass Janeway from time to time. But, you know, we left Sisko alone after one encounter, but Picard, he keeps coming back to, and he likes to give Picard these challenges and give him a helping hand, but also put him in danger. But it almost feels like there's a connection between Q and Picard that became established after their first encounter that became stronger over time. And it could be that because something in Picard is not well, that that is also impacting Q. And maybe Q needs to help Picard recover so that he himself can recover.
I think, you know, I kind of thought the same thing that you did in that way. And that, so this is why, you know, Q is back, because it's not an altruistic thing. And I'm wondering if they're going to tie that into the first season, in the sense that because Picard had died, literally, and then was brought back, and that this part of him is continuing basically to die because he's not allowing himself to open up. He won't be vulnerable with a person fully. That it is that, again, like you said, that there's this connection between him and Q. And so I think that's really, really a great way to go. And it's interesting too, because, you know, Q brings him to the vineyard and he says, this is literally the same day that Picard had yesterday, mm-hmm. but it's a different harvest. And so in the end, this is really about reaping what we've sown. And apparently what we've sown because of what was changed is slightly different. And so this whole thing is about hopefully Picard being a student of his own behavior, but allowing himself to finally crack the egg mm-hmm. of his psyche, finally crack the egg of his fear. Because that's another thing that Q says, is that this is in the wake of your fear, and that Picard knows what this is because Q says, you need forgiveness. And Picard says, forgiveness for what? And Q says, you know,
yeah,
Jean-Luc.
Right.
And so I think it's just really fascinating because, again, I think the first 20 minutes of this episode really are driving home that whatever is happening is actually the result of Q almost maybe in some way trying to save Picard mm-hmm. from himself, and yeah. maybe, like you said, trying to save himself as well.
Right, because I don't really know why Q would be trying to save Picard just to be saving Picard if there's nothing in it for him.
Right.
And given the oddness of his behavior and the seriousness of his behavior, I think everyone was probably a bit shocked when Q struck Picard and Picard bled. We've not really seen Q act mm-hmm. in that kind of deadly sincere manner before. Yeah, so definitely Q has something to lose in this himself if Picard isn't successful.
Now, I 100% agree. And in all honesty, I think too, you know, one of the reasons for kind of showing us, I think, this timeline and whatever is going to make the change in 2024 is going to be this idea is that you reap what you sow. And so what are we sowing? And mm-hmm. and obviously the idea, it sounds like, of continually sowing fear. I think that's one of the things that what we see in this totalitarian universe, right? This universe is completely driven by fear run amok.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is, you know, Picard's fear, his inability to be vulnerable. This is where every good thing about Picard has been downplayed and every negative thing about him has been put on like times 1,000. And that's that universe. And mm-hmm. so obviously they're really, I think, going to be playing with this idea of through where we see the Confederation, mm-hmm. but then what we see most likely as being whatever the link, the one thing, you know, the Borg Queen says it was one thing that got tweaked in 2024. And so that'll be really interesting to see mm-hmm. where they go with that and how that works. And again, what does that have to do with Picard when it's in 2024?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Picard's not that old.
Yeah. See, if they had said that it was in 2021... I would have thought, well, probably that one little thing that got tweaked was that CBS Viacom Paramount, they pulled Star Trek off of Netflix globally 2 days before Discovery Season 4 premiered. But since it's 2024, I'm not yet sure what happens. Maybe Amazon stops selling Star Trek box sets. I don't know. Something, though, is going to change the future.
That could be it.
Yeah.
That could be it. That'd be funny.
Last time we asked each other the question, why 2024? Specifically 2024. And what you just said may be one of the reasons. I mentioned that it's probably related to the general sci-fi goal of commenting on society. So social commentary, giving us warnings of what's coming up,
mm-hmm.
Allowing us to reflect on ourselves. And as you just said, it's sort of fear run amok. And this is a world that's built entirely on fear. And if you look at our world right today, we're constantly being fed fear mm-hmm. by media, by politicians. Everything is fear driven. Mm-hmm. Not literally everything, of course, but...
but close.
Close, right? All you need to do is open up pretty much any news website and read the mm-hmm. headlines. And even if the story itself isn't driving fear as much, the headline is. And so we are living in that world, and it's sort of a warning that if we continue to do that, we condition ourselves that everything is bad and negative and falling apart right. all the time. It could lead to yep. a very bad future.
Well, and I think that this episode also kind of in many ways, it helped me understand why we have the characters we have, I think, in this season. And I think specifically the characters along with Picard that are similar are obviously Seven of Nine and also Agnes. Because mm-hmm. what do we find out about Agnes in this episode is that she has a complete inability to function in any relationship with a real person.
Right.
And that she has this sense, the Borg Queen says, of unbelonging.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this intense amount of loneliness in her, and she has no way to understand that completely so that she can overcome it. In many ways, the same way that Picard and Seven have the same type of issues. And so there's this mirroring happening with all three of these characters. And so that was something I thought that was really well done in the episode that helps us understand as to why we're on the adventure with these three characters, like specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, in many ways, you kind of mirror them with somebody like Rios and with Rafi and Elnor. And those three characters are not in that place, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have this problem. I mean, you know, Rios isn't perfect, but you can even tell he's become a much more whole person by this season. You know, Rafi is the same way. Something in her has changed completely. And Elnor is just really the complete innocence still.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things that I'm at least seeing in this season is that it really does feel like they boiled this down to, okay, who are the characters we have? Why are they here? And why do they need to be a part of this story? So that there isn't anything superfluous yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if that continues, this could be one of the best seasons of Star Trek of all time, because this so far has been very cohesive.
Yeah. I'm curious to see if it remains so cohesive, but
yeah, me too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great way of looking at this core set of characters and how they mirror one another as groups and being similar. And the Borg Queen, her presence, I thought, was interesting in that observation that she made about Agnes that you just talked about, because they've set up the Borg Queen. The Borg Queen can kind of see many threads of reality, has insights that other people can't see, and she like senses that right away. The fact that Agnes starts up this kind of argument with Rios at a critical moment when they really need to be focused on getting everyone out of there, I think also highlights what you're talking about, where she just cannot function in this kind of relationship. And they set that up in the first episode when the Delton was hitting on her. And even if you look back at what happened to her last season, you can see that. So I think they've evolved Agnes's character very well in a way that feels natural and makes sense. Mm-hmm. And particularly it works well in this season for what this story mm-hmm. is going to be. And they've kind of made her the comic relief. But
yeah.
But oh, in yeah. a way that feels natural. Like, I don't mm-hmm. feel like they're going for cheap laughs every time. It's just the right. way that she presents things is funny.
And I will say, you know, I think she might be the least successful character right now for me personally. Mm-hmm. She's a little bit too modern. Rafi skates that line, you know, but I think Rafi does it much better in the sense that, especially the way she's written now, she's just so much more relaxed as a person and a character.
Yeah.
So those things seem to come. But this, you know, people might hate me if I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. She reminds me of the Tilly character. It's that nervous, like,
yeah, I can see that
yammering that she does. Yeah. And again, it is very, very modern when it comes to the type of dialogue that she's delivering.
That's true.
And I will say that's definitely something that's modern Trek, you know, these days. It's much less Shakespearean as the other series have been, where they were, especially, I think, the 24th century Trek, very much more rooted in a kind of stage play, Shakespearean type of language. So all that said, though, again, I think you are right in the sense that you can see the cracks in that character's armor, and it'll be interesting, again, if they can keep this cohesion throughout the season. These characters, especially those three, will absolutely not be the same by the end of this season, which is phenomenal. I mean, that's kind of what we want when we're doing this type of television.
Yeah, that's a good observation. Or as Elnor would say, that's a great observation. Because he has absolute candor. I love how he his little comments this episode.
Yeah, but he's very funny.
It's a great observation about her character. And I do agree that, yeah, she is like that. She doesn't fit in the style of the rest of the characters, which are more in line with Star Trek as we know it. I think it kind of works well in this situation, though, to have one character who feels a bit less grounded and less heroic than the others, but who's brilliant, and they're going to need her mind to get through the situation. I think that for today's audiences, having a character like that does help some viewers connect with the story. I think that's why Tilly works well for a lot of people, although I personally am not a fan of the Tilly character. I think a difference here, too, though, is that Agnes is not being elevated to try to be one of the, you know, leaders of the ship, whereas Tilly rises all the way up to being first officer at one point in Discovery.
Oh, goodness.
And that makes a little bit of a difference. But I will say, though, that in one way that Agnes is a completely successful character, and this overrides any other concerns that we might have, is the fact that she gave Seven the nickname Annika Seven Shots.
Yeah. So that was pretty great.
I really want to go drinking with Annika Seven Shots.
The story she came up with for that was fantastic. And then when she riddles off the lie like the Romulan plot with the Borg and all this, like it is great. I mean, and so again, I think there are definitely some really interesting things about the character. And I wanted to, there's a couple things in this time period I wanted to talk to you about because I thought were really interesting. One was, did you notice that the Confederation emblem kind of mirrors Cobb's top totem in Inception? That it looks very similar to that. Okay. Which is very interesting to me because the top for him was the totem to let him know that he was in a dream or not in a dream.
So you're talking about the top that he spins, like, and
yes.
I remember at the end of the movie, it's spinning again,
exactly.
You still don't know. I see.
Idea to me of like that this universe almost is like possibly a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's something that really struck me in the design. Because it was very evident because it was a very interesting symbol to choose for that. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm wondering what other people think of that. And then the second was, did you notice that the rhetoric of the other Picard from that universe sounds so much like the propaganda tapes from Starship Troopers, the movie?
Maybe. I haven't watched Starship Troopers in years and years since I read the book and then I watched the movie after that. But But that makes sense for sure in terms of the type of story that we're getting.
Waiting. Yeah. I just kept waiting for somebody to go, would you like to know more?
That might come up. One thing I noticed, an obvious thing I'm sure everyone picked up on with the Confederation emblem, is that it also mirrors the United Federation of Planets emblem yes. in a way, but with just the one star, meaning yep. Earth, with the others gone because they've been eradicated. And I thought that mm-hmm. was a nice little artistic evolution right. of what we're familiar with for this universe.
Because in Starship Troopers, they say the only good bug is a dead bug.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
And that's basically the same type of rhetoric we're hearing from, like, the only good alien is a dead alien and mm-hmm. or slave, right?
Yeah.
And so it's so over the top, right, that I think it's very interesting that, you know, this universe just doesn't really feel real in some ways, mm-hmm. right? But, and so I'm really wondering then how they're going to bring all of that together. And that's where the idea of like a top or something and then there being this one thing that's changed, it's like, I almost feel like this does kind of come back to what we were talking about in the first episode, where it's Picard and the tapestry, the road not taken, mm-hmm. and that that Q is trying to get him to see by continuing to take the road of invulnerability and lack of vulnerability, that he is committing himself to a type of death, as mm-hmm. well as this is what happens when everybody does that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of one of the things where we're going to get the cultural relevance to today, which is we need to be more vulnerable with each other. We need to be learning to trust one another. We need to be building bridges towards one another, not, you know, mm-hmm. setting them on fire. And so that's where I see all this stuff kind of like maybe coming together in the final few episodes.
Yeah. Because if Picard is deluding himself by feeling that he's invulnerable, not letting anyone in, and then if everyone does it and you have a mass delusion, it leads
exactly.
to this. And also the idea
of mass delusion. Great point, Chris. That's an excellent way to put it.
Right. And also the idea of like the flock of sheep, you know, everyone following. I think that mm-hmm. today we tend to get into these groups and just follow one thought and not really think for ourselves enough and not try to find out the reality of what's going on enough
right.
and get facts and not rely on one voice to guide us somewhere. I think that we see that more and more and more, which could also lead to, like you said, what if Picard does this? This happens. What if everyone does this? And then it leads down mm-hmm. this road.
Yeah. Well, and then part of that, I think, and maybe this is almost even a reflection, right, of the first season. Like, isn't that kind of what we saw in the first season, which seemed to be the antithesis of all of Star Trek, right, that we'd been seeing in the 24th century? And I think that's why many people, myself included, kind of reviled against that idea. Like, mm-hmm. we were supposed to have grown past this by that point. That was the whole point of the 24th century. And so this season, I think maybe this is a way of playing with some of those ideas in a way that actually, instead of it dealing with the Federation on a whole, it's really dealing with the person we should have been dealing with the whole time, which is Picard mm-hmm. himself.
Right. Yeah. One other thing we should talk about that we predicted last week, and it appears to have already turned out to be true, is that I said probably the Borg Queen is around because Picard and the Borg Queen are going to have to work together somehow to restore the timeline, not only so that the Federation is saved, but so that the Borg are also saved. And that actually came out in the dialogue in this episode. The Borg Queen says the Hive is gone, and they ask her, will you help us get back to a future where the collective exists for you as well? And that seems to be the reason that the Borg Queen is here, not simply, oh, wouldn't it be cool to have the Borg Queen because she has this connection to Picard?
No, I agree. And I thought the other really nice thing that they do here is, and obviously they're really tying into the idea that she understands that there's a change in time. She's mm-hmm. the one that helps them pinpoint when the change came because mm-hmm. of her temporal knowledge that she has, which mm-hmm. is great. I think it excellent use of those type of things, and all seems to make sense when we talk about the Borg. And again, if you haven't read Coda, this is actually something that kind of plays in with that, which is really cool. And the idea that she's the one, you know, they talk about Spock was there for the original Enterprise to do the mm-hmm. slingshot maneuver. Well, none of them are good enough to do that, but she can. And so again, having her there, and then on top of all of that, like you said, Chris, one of the most important things in this idea of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And mm-hmm. with them having to work together in that moment, right, will the Borg let itself be vulnerable with the Federation and choose peace finally? And will the Federation allow itself to be vulnerable and choose peace with the Borg, which, as Picard said, this could be a momentous occasion and change the entire future as we know it. That's the larger, I think, theme that plays with the personal theme. Mm-hmm. So by them working together, when they go back, will they be able to help be the change they wish to see?
Yeah, right. And I very much hope that if they do the slingshot around the sun maneuver, I hope we get foam heads of Picard and Raffi and Agnes and everything floating up as mm-hmm. they go back yes. in time.
Yep.
I want to see yep. like a 21st century, 2022 version of that drug trip from Voyage Home.
Absolutely. And everybody will get their special brownie out when that scene comes on. And that's exactly what needs to happen. Exactly right. What needs to happen.
Right. The only question is, which park in Los Angeles will they land the La Serena? So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all turns out with the Borg and how the Borg Queen plays into the action mm-hmm. since she doesn't have legs. Are they going to push her around Los Angeles, or is she going to stay on the ship? I don't know.
It's going to be awkward. Yeah. So a couple of things I wanted to ask you. One, obviously, the Borg Queen says that there's someone there, someone to help, a watcher. Yeah. Do you think that's Guinan?
Yeah, that was my instant thought. If it's not, it might not be. But if it's not, I'll be surprised, because I think the fact that Picard already went and found the mm-hmm. bar in his own reality and she was there. And I can't mm-hmm. imagine that Whoopi Goldberg is only there for that one little bit of dialogue.
Sure.
And the way that the dynamic, well, the way Star Trek storytelling works and the way that the dynamic between Picard and Guinan works is that she counsels him and then there's a follow-up session. And I think that what we saw in the first episode is the setup to the problem. And of course, what she set up was that you need to explore in here. You need to be able to let someone in. You need to open up. And as you've been talking about today, that may be what Q is trying to get Picard to understand as well. And it would make sense that Picard would then find Guinan again in this alternate history. And it's possible that as an Elorian, that Guinan has some ability, kind of like the Borg Queen seems to have here, of being aware of the different timelines. We've actually kind of seen that, because we saw it in yesterday's Enterprise, that Guinan mm-hmm. knew that history was wrong, that time had been broken.
Yeah, and Q even brings that episode up, because he drops a couple of name titles. He does yesterday's Enterprise and In the Mirror Darkly, which makes sense that both of those type of things are kind of seen in the way that the Federation has been completely warped into something different.
Yeah. And the way that he delivers one of them almost did feel like a clue, because he said, oh, how yesterday's Enterprise of you.
Yes.
As if he's referencing the actual situation in that story.
Yeah, he's That's the name that Picard had given that log entry was yesterday's Enterprise.
Maybe so. It's like we see in Travis's quarters on the horizon in Enterprise and on Giorgio's shelves in Discovery, books with the titles of original series episodes, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It's sort of like that. Yeah, Picard names his captain's logs the same. He gives them the same names we know them as from the TV episodes. But anyway, yeah, I really think the Watcher is going to be Guinan, and I think there's going to be a continuation of this dialogue between Picard and Guinan, which is going to help guide Picard in what he needs to do to restore history.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I mean, Picard really gives some of the same speech he does in First Contact too. You know, we've got to go back and repair whatever that damage they've done. Basically, we've got to go back and figure this out. And I think this is one of the things we did talk about. And so it'll be really interesting just to kind of see, does this feel like all the time travel episodes in a blender, or does this make something new? One thing I wanted to ask you though, because especially on the rewatch, the last 10-15 minutes of this episode feel like it's taking too much time because we just want to kind of have some action. And I don't really know, and maybe it'll feel different when we get to the next episode, but it felt as though this episode should have just basically put them in 2024 and that's where we ended, rather than ending on a quote-unquote cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It almost just felt like we're misusing the time we have in a 10 episode season when we already know they're going to get to 2024.
Right.
I don't know exactly why we're dragging this out. And again, this, you know, when you're watching it more episodically, there's absolutely the ability to have it make more sense next time. But I just felt to me like this episode at the end does drag a little bit more than it should with kind of drawing out the action.
Yeah, I kind of had that feeling as well. Initially, I thought it made sense that they're trying to stall. Picard is obviously trying to stall.
Oh, yeah.
But when I rewatched it, I noticed that I felt anyway, I don't know if she's really doing it on purpose, I felt like Seven delivering her speech as the president was also trying to take a little bit longer to deliver her speech. Like the pauses between the lines were maybe a little bit longer than she would have otherwise done because she's also trying to buy time.
Sure. Yeah.
She thinks that Agnes and Rios and Raffi are going to be able to do this more quickly and she just needs to buy a little bit of time, but then it keeps taking longer. Then I started feeling like, okay, we're dragging this out too long. It's to the point where it's not feeling realistic anymore. And I don't know if I like the idea of Picard having to start firing on the other Confederation, like security and people there.
That's a great point. Yep.
I personally would have liked it better if they had been able to just beam out and the crowd was shocked by what happened instead of having this moment where they maybe start to turn on him. Then I'm thinking about it a little bit more. Well, then when they're getting ready to time travel and then the magistrate arrives and has security with him and it seems like they're going to be stopped, I thought, okay, this is really unnecessary. We're creating drama just for the sake of drama and we need to get on with the story and not have this like last hurdle that they need to get over.
Right.
Then I started thinking more about it. You know, it may be that they need the magistrate in the past, that he's going to turn to their side. And if they didn't have him with them in 2024, they won't be able to solve the problem.
Yep.
And they needed a way to get him into the past with them. But there's no way that they would be able to tell him what was going on and bring him. Mm-hmm. And so this is a way where by Picard firing on them, it drives the magistrate to seek them out and he has enough time to get up there. And it could be kind of like, it could be Q's way of making sure that this person gets back with right. them. At the same time, I don't necessarily think that Q, he's not like a puppet master guiding the movement of everyone the whole way. So I don't think he's like directly intervening and causing a delay. But but anyway, I think that probably the magistrate is going to play an important role and they need him to be there.
Sure.
And that's the reason why everything got dragged out at the end. But it definitely felt like the pacing was off a bit.
Yeah.
And definitely, I think a lot of viewers probably felt like, why don't we get moving a little bit here?
No, I 100% agree with you. And I think you rightly just laid out all the ways in which this can be ameliorated in the next episode, right? You know, it'll feel better when you watch it. Because, I mean, these episodes are legitimately kind of creating a 10-hour movie because they are legitimately picking up. I mean, at least the second episode picked up right where the first episode left off. And so I think obviously when you're making TV like that and then you have to wait a week, some things might feel unresolved or not feel right until you get to the next part, which is it's the same thing that happens if you're reading a book and you leave a chapter and you're like in the middle of a scene, basically, because you got to go back to work. Happens to me all the time. You know, that's the same type of feeling. And so I hope that's the case, because I think one of the things that I think I rightly praise this season so far for is that everything feels very cohesive so far. So I'm just kind of like crossing my fingers saying, please don't drop the ball this season and take that away from us. Because right now what you're setting up is really great stuff. And I just want it to continue to be at this level. And hopefully that'll be the case.
One other thing I wanted to note is that when Picard saw the Borg Queen, he had the sense of familiarity. And I think you and I felt the same way when we saw the Borg Queen, because it wasn't long ago that you and I were talking about Oasis in our Enterprise rewatch on Warp 5. And of course, the Borg Queen here is played by Annie Wershing, who played Liana in Oasis.
That's
true. So I had a little sense of familiarity there.
Well, she was in another show, sci-fi show called Timeless as well. And, you know, she's been a lot of things and she's excellent in everything that I've seen her in. I really enjoy her. So, very cool that she got the opportunity to play the Borg Queen here. And I think what's great is that she looks enough like the Borg Queen from First Contact.
Yeah.
She is similar enough to that actress more than Susanna Thompson was in Voyager.
Yeah, I think so.
And so I think that's something that really helps. And the makeup job on her is phenomenal. Yeah. Like, they've done a very good job.
I feel like they've kind of aged her a little bit as well to fit into the fact that everyone else is aged.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's very, very interesting. And this might be a really strange thing to notice, but I noticed that the graphic that showed her on the computer there actually had her with her hands shackled in front of her. And yet the graphic made it look like she was not wearing anything, which was very strange because it gave her much more humanity than seeing it look like she was wearing the Borg suit.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I wonder, this is one of those little background things that I noticed. I'm like, are they trying to say that we're stripping almost the Borg Queen of her technology in some ways and trying to show more of the humanity? And I don't know if that's the case, but that'll be really interesting to see if, you know, because Picard, just talked myself into it, Chris. Picard, in some ways, has been Borgish in his inability to let somebody into his life in the most human of ways, right? Which is an intimate relationship. The Borg, that is also their problem, right? is their inability to negate the technology and have the quote unquote human connection, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to that.
Could be. That's an interesting observation, as Elnor would say. So we'll find out.
Apparently, I'm just full of those today.
You are.
Or I'm just full of it.
And I have to be honest about it. I mean, absolute candor. For sure. All right. Well, we could talk about many, many, many more things from this episode, but we should wrap this one up for now. So do you have any last thoughts, final thoughts, and what's your rating for this episode?
Goodness. I think that this is a very good episode again. I mean, it's probably around a 4 out of 5 Borg Queen head tubules, but it's, you know, it's a solid episode. I think it sets us up with continuing the mystery well of what's happening, and it really, it's keeping my interest, and it's also making me want to watch the next episode, which is exactly what you want with this kind of television. And so all I can say is, you know, writers are doing a great job so far. Just crossing my fingers that continues. What about you, Chris? Where are you landing here with, you know, your thoughts and final thoughts and maybe even rating for the episode too?
Yeah, same for me. I'm really hooked on the story. I'm intrigued by the somewhat different take on Q than the typically more humorous take that we've gotten in the past. I think they've done a really nice job of setting up the story, working with the characters. And I just hope that we find Picard in Los Angeles 2024. Part of solving the mystery is that they all have to get jobs as highway repair crew, striping the street so that we can hear Picard once again say, "The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther."
Excellent. Excellent.
And who knows? Maybe that will happen because there's always road construction going on.
That would be fantastic.
In cities like that. So yeah, I'm going to give this one 7 shots plus 1 enjoyed with Annika Hansen. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Penance, on where you think the story is going. And there are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to join our listeners group on Facebook called the Babel Conference. If you're already a member, you know what to do. If you're not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If not, type the whole name. It is a closed group, so please do answer the questions and agree to the rules so that I can let you in. And we will have a post there for this episode of The Artificial Tango, and you can add your comments and interact with fellow listeners and us there in that thread. You can also send us email if you like. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there and choose to send to a show. Choose The Artificial Tango, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username on Twitter is trekfm. Same goes for Instagram and everywhere in social media. And we'd love to hear from you there. Now, Matthew, when you're not picking out just the right outfit so you'll blend in 2024 Los Angeles, where can people find you?
Well, you can also find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. So that's Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter, Vero, all of those places. Here on the network, too, you'll find me doing the 602 Club, which is our whole other side of the network. We have so much devoted to Star Trek, we want to talk other things. So the 602 Club is the place we do that. There's some great bonus shows in that feed as well that you can find. Snyder Cuts, as well as Assembling Avengers, doing with John Mills, talking about some very specific subjects, which is a lot of fun to do. And then you can also find me, of course, doing Literary Treks, The Orb, and Warp 5. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Warp 5, Chris, you and I are walking through Enterprise every single episode as we celebrate 20 years of that show, which makes me feel old every time we do. And then, of course, The Orb, where we talk about our beloved Deep Space Nine together. And then over on the Nerd Party, you'll find me doing two shows. One is a completed show called Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, We talk about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time. And then John Mills and I love talking Star Wars, so Aggressive Negotiations is the place that we do that. Now, Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out just how big you want that communicator on your chest to be in this alternate universe, where can people find you?
It is awfully big, isn't it?
Yeah, they're overcompensating for something.
Something. Apparently, they eradicated all the good designers in this history. And
I almost spit out my drink there, Chris.
I wish people could see you on video. I said that right as you were taking a drink of water. And
that was great.
You a minute to recover there. So. But yeah, when I'm not making space on my chest for that giant badge, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing, as you mentioned, The Orb, where we talk Deep Space Nine, talking Enterprise with you on Warp 5. I have Interphase, Larry Nemechek and I do their Ready Room from time to time, and I'm doing all kinds of other things as well, so check those out. And if you would like to chat with me, Twitter is the best place. That's where I'm most active. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to talk to you about Star Trek or Japan or whatever you want to talk about. I'm always up for a conversation, so hit me up there. Now, if you would like to help us keep this show and everything that we are doing on the network going, we could really use your help through Patreon. If you'd like to find out how to get involved in the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And you can find out how to help us out, get involved. And I'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone who is supporting us there. And Matthew, we would like to send a huge thanks to our associate producer of The Artificial Tango, Cornelia Rutner. Cornelia is supporting us through Patreon with associate producer credits, and we really Woo-hoo! Thank her so much for helping us do The Artificial Tango without throwing out a hip. Very important.
It's very important, Chris, especially at our age.
Exactly. Yeah. So thank you, Cornelia, so much for your support. And again, everyone else who would like to help us keep the network going, please do check us out on Patreon. Well, Matthew, I am very curious to see where the story goes. I'm getting all set. I'm baking the brownies now. I'm getting ready for that time travel slingshot around the sun and looking forward to talking about it with you next week.
Chris, I can't wait, so make it so.
Matthew, I realized that during our discussion, we mentioned General Sisko, but we didn't really dig into what that might mean. And I've heard some people speculating, do you think it's Jake? And my first reaction was, why would I think it's Jake and not Benjamin? What do you think? I mean, do you think it's Jake? Do you think it's Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the Reckoning tablet has anything to do with the mention?
It's such a great question. And I think it honestly, you know, it could be anyone, but I'm leaning towards it being, you know, Ben rather than Jake, just because that feels more right for the story. And just when you say the name Sisko, I think that more people think of Benjamin Sisko than they do of Jake. Obviously, they both have the same last name. They're related. He's father, son, you know, but I just think that that's really what they're going for. And I do wonder, you know, we mentioned the Reckoning tablet and everything. Does that have anything to do with what they're going to do with fixing things? Again, dropping that name, it could just be, hey, we want to drop the name. We want to give fans fun. You know, it's always fun when you name drop like that. But does it mean more? So I don't know, for you, did you take it at all as possibly being Jake, or did you just immediately jump to Ben as well?
I never thought about Jake until I saw some people online speculating, oh, maybe it's Jake. I always immediately thought Ben, and I think some people might be thinking Jake for two reasons. One, because so much time has gone by that even though Picard is still alive, maybe Benjamin wouldn't be. And then maybe more so because Ben, he doesn't die at the end of DS9, but he's gone off with the prophets.
It's true.
And for those who haven't gotten into the novels and all, we don't know what happens to him after that. So people are kind of assuming that Ben is gone. But I think it's more likely that in this history, maybe Sisko never went to be with the prophets.
100%.
Maybe that wasn't the outcome of his time on Bajor. I started to say maybe he never went to Bajor, but the fact that the Reckoning Tablet is there gives us that connection.
Yes. Yeah.
Gives us that connection to Bajor. But I think it's more likely that in this history, he did not fight Dukat. He did not go into the fire caves, and he did not end up with the prophets. And,
you know, well, I mean, because this Dukat was killed by, you know, Picard, and he's the reason that he has the artificial body. So
which I thought was
absolutely
an interesting
thing. They're saying, I think that those are, that is not the history of this Sisko.
Yeah. And he mentions that Dukat is killed outside the Ithian forests. And that's something that our friend Una McCormick made up for her books. And so it got referenced in here. And and just last note on that scene where all this happens. Did you see Una tweet out a side-by-side photo of Dukat's skull and then Garak smiling next to it?
Yes, that was fantastic.
That was so funny.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Anyway, but I love the Sisko reference, speculating on what it is, and the DS9 tie-ins in this episode.
And in all honesty, I'll say I do hope for that this does involve all of that somehow. You know, I think that would be phenomenal. So I guess we'll, all we can say is we'll see.
We'll see.